before we jump into verses 10 through 17, which is part of what we'll be studying this morning, can we get a brief recap as to what we looked at last week in verses 1 through 9? Figure if somebody from the audience summarizes it, we'll be able to get through a summary a whole lot quicker than if I try to. Just what are some of the highlights of some of the events that occurred in the first 9 verses? Suck it up in your okay, and that's what we're actually going to read about that this morning. His making good on his vow to these two cities, Succoth and Peniel, when he crossed the Jordan, chasing the Midianites. It says, verse 4, that they were weary but pursuing. And so when he stopped for food and stopped for a reprieve, they refused to aid him. So we'll look at that this morning, see if we can kind of talk a little bit about maybe some of his motive in dealing with that. So I think Gideon's character is really revealed for us here. I'm going to try the best I can to take somewhat of a non-biased approach. I'm going to just take this off. I may be coughing a little bit. I don't know. Y'all don't want to hear that picked up every time.
Try to take as much of a non-biased approach as we can as we consider Gideon. All right, let's look at verses 10 through 17. We started. Brother Collier, would you read that text for us, please? Speaking a little better, so hopefully we won't have to make this a permanent arrangement. But back in chapter 7 and verse 3, the Israelite force was almost 32,000 versus a Midianite force that was almost 100, or just at 135,000. Before the Lord reduced the numbers of the Israelite troops, that's almost a 1-5 ratio. And so it's not a very good position to be in to start with. But the Lord said, you know, you need to reduce the troops down, and he reduced the Israelite troops from 32,000 down to only 300. So you've now got 300 versus 135,000, which Tommy also pointed out and saved the math for us, 1 to 450. So for every one Israelite, there are 450 Midianites. And back in chapter 2, you really got a very important verse where God says to Gideon, I don't want you to think that this is going to be a victory given to you by your own strength. as if 1 verse 5 wasn't enough. We're going to make it 1 verse 450. And so the point of this was so that Israel might realize that this was God's doing, and hopefully it would turn them back to God in the process. Verses 11 and 12, we've got Gideon and his 300 that have pursuing the Midianite army. They're chasing the kings of Midian as the entire army has been routed. Now, verses 11 and 12, and this is one of Brother Barker's favorite comments to make. What did you notice missing in this text versus back in Gideon's victory in chapter 7? What I think is a very crucial detail that seems to be missing, but what's missing here in chapter 8 versus back in chapter 7? Exactly. So previously, God was very involved in Gideon's process and Gideon's battle and Gideon's strategy, from the men that would go to how it would be done. The word of the Lord came to Gideon and told him, communicated to him how that would be. But that detail seems to be missing here. Now, whether we're just not told that it happened, I got a feeling, you know, anytime that you have that, them acting kind of on their own, you find out when they appeal to the Lord. You find out that they inquire of the Lord whenever they seek God's advice. And whenever you see it left out, oftentimes what you see is men and women and characters acting on their own without the approval of God. And I think that's probably what we're looking at now. And so the very thing that God warned of back in chapter 7 and verse 2, where he said, I want the people to know that this is God giving the victory, I'm worried that this is going to come to pass. Dick, you just have your hand up? Nothing? Oh, is it? All right, well, raise your other hand if you want to make a comment then, and I'll call on you. Okay, so Gideon, and they rout the army in verses 11 and 12, and they're pursuing the two kings, Zeba and Zalmunna. They capture them, and they defeat them, and he kind of takes them as a trophy, if you will. We'll see how he deals with them a little bit later on. In verses 13 through 15, I want to look at a few things here. The threat is over. Midian is defeated. The rout is complete. They're no longer going to raise their head and oppress the children of Israel. But is Gideon happy with just a victory over the enemies, a defeat of the Midianites? No, he's not. Tommy mentioned that he's going to go back and he's going to deal with these two little towns, Succoth and Penuel. So he returns to fulfill his promised punishment. And it starts off by him capturing one of the young men from one of the towns and then forcing him to write down all of the names of the elders who were overseeing this particular city. So let's look at a question, and this is one that's revealed for us in the text. Not a lot of opinion on this. How did Gideon punish the people of Succoth and Penuel? That's a pretty good. I had a lot of spankings through the years, and I had switches, but I never had briars. But that seems to be the method, particular method that he chooses to punish the people, the men of Succoth, the elders of Succoth. So he takes and he thrashes them with briars, and that thrash is a pretty good word as to what he did, you know. So what did he do to the city of Penuel?
Tore down their tower and he killed the men.
Okay, tore down their tower and killed the men. All right. Now, you can turn back in your map, and I wish I had a copy here. The towns of Succoth and Penuel, if you look at the tribe of Gad, Gad is on the east side of the Jordan River, right across where Gideon and his men were crossing, pursuing the army. And so as soon as he crossed the Jordan, remember, you've got these two cities that are kind of separated from all of the others by the Jordan River. And as Gideon crosses over and asks them for help, they say, essentially, where are the rest of the kings that you're going to war against? Why should we help you? And so we realize they're probably somewhat fearful after having been oppressed by the Midianites for so long, and so they refuse to give aid to Gideon. And so as Gideon's going back, these two towns of Succoth and Penuel are in the tribe of Gad. It was mentioned to me on the way out, I never operated or never considered the fact that perhaps these were Canaanite towns or Canaanite cities. And so what Gideon was doing perhaps would have been some sort of judgment on the Canaanites. I didn't even entertain the thought. As I read it, though, and as I look back, the only other place Succoth is really mentioned is back in the book of Joshua, as they're delegating the portions of the inheritance, the portions of the land, and that city, along with other territories or other cities in that area, is given to Gad. And just several things, though, as I read this in the context, kind of cause me to believe that we're talking about Israelite cities. not about Canaanite cities. One, Gideon appeals to them for aid. If he were 300 men in pursuit of a 15,000 men army, he probably would not go to the enemies or the Canaanites if that was a Canaanite city asking for aid. What he'd do is, you remember several chapters back where Sisera is fleeing from the Israelites. Well, he goes to one of the Canaanite mercenaries, or one of the Canaanite friendlies in the land. And so Gideon wouldn't be seeking out aid from Canaanites, I don't think. Just as you think about the text, with only an army of 300 men. Rather, he would be appealing to an Israelite city. And to me, that's a major point that he's dealing with Israelite cities. Anyone else think differently about that? I thought about it, and I believe personally these are Israelite cities. Tommy? Possibly, he did threaten each of them. You know, he said to the city of Succoth, you know, I'm going to take these briars and I'm going to thrash you when I get back, essentially. And then to the city of Penuel, he said, I'm going to tear down this tower. But when the actual punishment's, you know, completed, we find out that he tore down the tower and killed some of the men. And so perhaps they were somewhat resistant. I would think if a leader of 300 men defeated an army of 15,000, that they would be pretty accepting of the punishment. Yes, the Lord is definitely with this guy. We don't know that they stiffened their necks or, you know, whatever, resisted the punishment that he tried to hand out. But for some reason, his punishment on the city of Penuel was worse than that of Succoth. But a question here, you know, just notice what Gideon does. He thrashes him with briars, he tears down the city, and he kills some of the people. So that leads me to ask this question. Do you think that Gideon should have relented his punishment of Succoth and Penuel, seeing as their negligence did not affect the outcome of the battle? Simply put, should he have shown a little bit of mercy? Or did these guys get what they deserved? I'll agree with that. But do you think he might have shown a little mercy? Or was he right in doing this? Okay. So if it wasn't, and I believe I'm fine operating under the idea that we're looking at Israelite cities here. They both rejected his aid, but also we're looking at Israelite cities that Gideon goes and treats very harshly. He beats them with thorns, he tears down a tower, and he kills the men of the city of Penuel. And so seeing as they didn't affect the outcome of the battle, you know, I personally can't help but wonder why Gideon chose to behave so diplomatically back with the men of Ephraim, who probably could have tore his army apart had it just been the men versus the men, and God's hand hadn't been intervened. I'll get you in just a sec, Dave. I can't wonder where's the diplomacy that he demonstrated just previously in the chapter. Dave? Well, doing so would have placed them on the side of the Israelites, and so they would have incurred the wrath of the Midianites. And when you think 15,000 versus 300, well, that's not hard to do the math on that, you know. So, and whether the 15,000 passed through their town so that they knew of their departure, we don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. John? Me? I think Gideon did. I think this is Gideon acting in a I think there's some very subtle clues, and I was going to jump to this a little bit later on. But to me, there is a phrase that stands out, and I believe Gideon, his character, really, we find out a lot revealed about him here in this text and definitely in the next portion. I think Gideon's confidence is going to his head. I think Gideon is acting on his own. We don't see him really consulting the Lord in the route and how that was done. Rather, we don't see him. Let me ask this question. Maybe this will help clarify. Why did Gideon punish these people? What was the reason he gave for punishing Penuel and Succoth? No. They taunted him. That's what he said. That's how my text reads it. Tommy, I can understand thinking that. That was what we read that. We think that. But let's see what verse it is. Verse 15. He came to the men of Succoth and he said, "Behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, concerning whom you taunted me, saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand that we should give you bread to your men who are weary?" Now, that's a very small phrase, and I didn't catch it until I'd read the story several times. It seems, at least as I read it, and maybe another version will shed some light on this, but as I read this, it sounds to me Gideon is acting. The part reason he gave for this punishment is because these men taunted him. Does anybody else see it that way? Dave? Okay. Dave? Well, that's remember, we looked at that last week. That's the Elohim term. That's the generic word for God term. And when you look at what Gideon does a little bit later on, it really causes me to question his loyalty to Yahweh, that is, to God. That's just me personally. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but seems to me the reason he comes back and deals with these men so harshly is because he says, "Guys, you taunted me. Well, here's the trophies right now, and we're about to make good on that." And I think we're going to see some more revealing his overconfidence, and maybe his victory in what he's done has kind of gone to his head, which is why God gave the warning back in verse 2. I don't want this to go to anybody's head, but I think I personally think Gideon falls prey to that. Let me.
Like what Dave just mentioned, he said, "When the Lord gives him to me," and then later he said, "No, I don't want to ruin it."
I think
he's got God on his mind.
Well, he may appear to have God on his mind, and we'll get to that a little bit more. He answers one way, but I think he acts in a different way personally. We'll look at that a little bit later. So, but you do bring out a good point. He gives the right answer when the people come and want to make him king. He says, "No, God's your king," and I think he gives the right answer. But as to whether that's what he really thinks, we'll see later on. Johnny? Okay. That's a man after God's own heart operating. All right, Dave, and then Tommy. All right, Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. But you would think he might have done a couple things here if his motive was truly, "I'm going to defend God's honor and God's glory." I would have thought in dealing with him, he would have said, "Y'all should have trusted in God. You should have put your faith in God to deliver. And, you know, on that basis, you're going to be punished." That's not what he said. He didn't even say, you're going to be punished because you didn't help your brethren when they were in the midst of battle. He said, "You're going to be punished because you taunted me, you know, when you asked about the hands and wrists of the kings." And so it seems like Gideon was the one that was insulting. Gideon's acting a little bit personally. Usually, God's purpose was to deliver the children of Israel from oppression. He's done that. But now he seems to be taking out a personal vendetta, and I think we're going to see a little bit later on. Tommy, were you going to add a little something else? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you think about David when he dealt with Saul. You know, he could have killed Saul, and Saul was an enemy. And David's attitude toward his enemies was different than Joab to his kinsmen. We're not talking about enemies. We're talking about kinsmen. And, yeah, they should have had faith. Yeah, they should have helped him, but they didn't. And regardless of the fact that they should have, they didn't, but they're also Israelites. You know, Dave? Yeah, like I said, I think we see a spiral. I think we're seeing a spiral. And all right, Dick, and then Johnny. All right, sorry, not your left, right hand, Johnny. For a period of time, you're right, and so we're gonna see really one of Gideon's biggest mistakes when we look at chapters 9 and 10. It's not a very pretty picture for the children of Israel. I'd mention the reason I asked this question: should Gideon have shown a little mercy to these people? The reason I lean toward yes is, where was Gideon whenever? What did God do for Gideon whenever he came to him? And Gideon was afraid. What did God do for him? Well. Several things. He gives him a sign. The angel gives him a sign. He evaporates the food from the altar. Okay, there's a sign. This is divine. This isn't me having a dream. This is divine. He provides him the two signs with the fleece, you know, the wet and the dry, demonstrating once again the divine nature of the calling. He sends his spirit on Gideon. He says the spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. He provides another sign the day of battle. You know, where he sneaks down to the camp and hears the Midianites saying, "I had a dream about the sword of the Lord, or sword of the Lord through Gideon is going to come and destroy the army of Midian." And God demonstrated multiple times to him his involvement in this. And these men have nothing as we know of divine. They probably should have witnessed the fleeing army and the 300 men. And yes, they should have trusted their kinsmen. But they didn't have near the demonstration of God's involvement that Gideon did when he was afraid. And so I would just think he might have, you know, remembered back to God's patience with him and thus dealt with the cities of Succoth and Peniel differently, because he was afraid. And it was only through God's patience and long-suffering that he was willing to step up to that point. These men of the city, although, yes, they should have done what Gideon said, they didn't. They didn't have near the demonstration that God was involved as Gideon did. Now, I think a little bit of mercy, especially considering his actions back in verse 3 with Ephraim, would have probably gone a long way. So, anyway, that's my opinion. That's my thought on it. But take a moment here, too, to appreciate really what the New Testament does for us. You know, you think about God's Word and how it changes us. We read a parable about the unforgiving servant. You know, in the New Testament, that Jesus tells of the man who is forgiven by his master for a debt of 10,000 talents, and then he goes and one man owes him 100 denarii, which is 100 days labor, essentially. And he takes him by his neck and starts choking him, you know, saying, "Pay what you owe me." And that's oftentimes how human nature tends to go in and of itself. And I think we see Gideon acting out here a little bit himself. You know, you think of what the New Testament reveals to us that we don't necessarily see in the old. The measure that you use to judge others, well, that measure is going to be poured back on you one day. And God's Word tells us that, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but look out for your brethren. You know, Gideon didn't have the same words come to him, and the people of old didn't have the same words come to them. But this is what God reveals in his new covenant. And think of how now that changes the way that you and I deal with our brethren. Was Gideon right? He had a point when he punished these people. I think his motive was wrong. But he did have a point that they, yes, should have been obedient to the working of God rather than their rejection. So aside from the fact that Gideon forgot what had been done for him on behalf of God, I think he should have shown a little bit of mercy. All right, we've dwelt with this question long enough. Does anyone want to add anything, ask any further questions? So we've had some good discussion considering this. Johnny? I was about to bring it up, so that's fair. You did that. You know, you've got some very human characters there, don't you? And so my last question is, whenever we'll close, probably next week, we'll be able to do it this week. But what do you think about Gideon overall? Go ahead and start thinking about that. I'm probably being more biased than I intended to be. I just kind of wanted to talk about the facts. But I got a strong opinion of Gideon, and I'm sorry if it's coming across in a biased way. I'm glad I've got everybody's comments kind of helping to temper what we read about this man. He did have some good things said about him. And I was going to bring out the book of Hebrews does bring him to the forefront as one of the men of faith. But he's there because of his faith and his obedience and not his perfection, as well as all of the other men are as well. And so we'll look at Gideon and we'll see a little bit more about him further as we get along. But yes, he did act in faith. And yes, he was a brave man. And yes, through faith in God, he turned the tide of the battle in favor of the Israelites. And so he is to be commended for that. Right. He wanted us to know. And the thing is, the Bible's, you'll hear me saying this a lot, the Bible's an honest book. It'll tell you about a man's flaws, and it'll tell you about his good things as well. And so it doesn't really cover up their mistakes and cover up their shortcomings. It just kind of paints a picture as they are. And I think that's good for us. All right, verses 18 through 21. All right. That's a good point. Negligence is probably, the sin of omission is probably the most frequent sin any of us participate in. It's not overt disobedience, but it's not taking action when action should be taken. And I'm with you, Steve, that they should have acted. They should have provided Gideon and their fellow Israelites with what he needed. At the same time, though, I don't believe Gideon's motives. Although perhaps his actions were just in his punishment of these men. I don't know about the killing of those people. You know, the killing of the people of Peniel. He said he was going to tear the tower down, but he ended up killing the men of the city. And so while his actions in part were just, I don't believe his motive at all was in the right place. I don't think he was bringing God's judgment on them, at least as the Bible indicates it. He communicates it as, you taunted me, you're about to get what's coming to you for taunting me. But you're right. That's the lesson to take away from their negligence is we come to that point in time, we got to make decisions. We got to pick a side. And sitting by doesn't do anybody any favors, and on their judgment, it's not going to do us any favors either. All right, verses 18 through 21, let's close with this text. I'll read it since it's got some of those challenging names in it. Then he said to Ziba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men were they whom you killed at Tabor?" And they said, "They were like you, each one resembling the son of a king." And he said, "They were my brothers, the son of my mother. As the Lord lives, if only you had let them live, I would not kill you." And so he said to Jether, his firstborn, "Rise, kill them." But the youth did not draw his sword, for he was afraid because he was still a youth. Then Ziba and Zalmunna said, "Rise up yourself and fall on us, for as the man, so is his strength." So Gideon arose, and he killed Ziba and Zalmunna, and he took the crescent ornaments which were on their camels' necks. Let me just open that up for comments in the last couple of minutes that we've got. You notice any motive in Gideon's dealing with these men again? This is part of what leads me to draw my the harsh conclusions, I'll admit, about Gideon that I do. Why does Gideon say he's going to kill these men? Did they kill who? Or maybe I'm misunderstanding what verse 19 saying. You say they killed his brethren. Verse 19 says when he's giving the reason as they were killing, or he's going to punish them, he asks, well, what kind of men was it you killed at Tabor? They said, they were like you, each one resembling the son of a king. And he said, they were my brothers, the sons of my mother. And so I took that and I understood that as they were my biological brothers. Did anybody else kind of take that away? Well, brothers, the sons of, you know, brethren would be one thing. But then he specifies, he adds that detail, and he says, they look like you. They were like you. They were kingly or whatever compliment they're trying to pay him. He says, they were my brothers, the sons of my mother. I personally understood that to mean that they were biologically related to him. So maybe I'm off base with that. But anyways, why are you killing these Midianite kings, Gideon? Because they oppressed your people and they oppressed God's people for 7 years? No, because they killed my brothers. And so once again, maybe I'm taking this thing too far, but the reason he gives for punishing these men was not God's purposes. He's lost sight of that, I think. But he's kind of acting personally now. Thoughts, comments? I would suspect in that process the kings would die. You know, otherwise they would restart, rebuild. They'd be back where they got started. That, you know, that's part of the command to destroy all of them, from the kings down to the lowest. Dave. I think he's just talking. Once again, but I think that's his ego saying, you know, these were my brothers. If you want to kill my brothers, I'd let you live. In actuality, he probably wouldn't have let them live. But now he's got a reason to act and reason to take vengeance. And once again, I think that points back to somewhat of a personal agenda rather than God's perspective. Any other comments as we close? All right, we'll pick up in verse 22 next week. I thank everyone for their great comments in our discussion this morning.